Bo Butler? Yes, sir. I love saying your name. It's got a great ring to it.
Thanks, Ray. What's going on?
What's up, man?
You know, nothing. Hockey.
All right. Everybody that I've talked to has always said that you're a great guy and a good musician.
Well, they're all lying, then.
You live in Richmond now?
Yeah.
If I'm not misinformed.
Correct. All the guys in Nevada still live here.
Okay. And I've seen your pictures from the ones that Jamie Fisher took that are up on the website of you playing from back in the day.
Super back. I think that was Jam for Man 1.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look like a very young teenager.
Oh, yeah. I think I was like 14 or 15 in that picture.
So what kind of memories did that bring back seeing the fit?
It was just crazy that, like, it had been so long. Because, I don't know. I mean, that was when I was in hospital environment, and we played that, and then I think a couple years later, when Avail played, when Pat Kennedy was still in the band, I wasn't officially in the band in Avail yet, and then the next time we did play, I was in the band, and I remember it being super fucking weird. I remember it being really cool, like, thinking about that. That was pretty neat that we could do that, but that's all I really, you know, it was fun.
Well, I guess you were the two guys that can say that you played in both hostile environment and Avail.
Yeah, totally. I think Tim has played in them. I want to say Tim played in LDK and Avail. But maybe he didn't play in LDK. I mean, he did play in LDK, but maybe he didn't do the LDK that played Jam for Man. I can't remember.
And Pat has, I guess, the honor of having also played in Remission too.
True. Yeah. So I guess
so he was in like three, quintessential wrestling bands.
Most of them. Yeah. He probably played in all three of them. Yeah. I didn't even think. I totally forgot. I totally forgot that he played in Remission.
So go Pat. Okay. Is he?
He lives in Richmond.
He's in Richmond also.
Yeah. He's like a general contractor or something.
All right, well, tell that dude to give me a call.
Sure. When I see him, I don't see him very often, but, you know.
You saw him last week.
Well, I mean, I hadn't seen him in probably a couple months, so. I don't think he drinks anymore, so I would never see him. I mean, I work in a bar, right?
Yeah.
So.
Do you guys ever have, like get-togethers or, like, you know, any kind of or jam sessions or anything where you get like all the guys from back in the day back together?
No. Never. I mean, we see each other, like all the Avail, like most of the Avail guys see each other all the time. But, you know, we just don't play music with each other, I should say. Because Ed plays music with Keypone, and I think he sticks around in another band. Tim obviously has his solo thing. Guamper was playing in a bunch of different bands, like touring and stuff. Like, he was in the Real McKenzie's touring band for a while. And, you know, he plays music occasionally, and he works at festivals now, like shuttling people and being a runner and stuff. So he's still around.
What's Guamper's real name?
Justin.
Is that a state secret? I don't know.
No, it's Justin Burdick.
Okay. Everybody just refers to him as Guamper.
Yeah, Guamper's been Guamper since like 84. So he's been Guamper forever. If he likes you, he'll introduce himself as Guamper. If he doesn't like you, he introduces you as Justin.
All right. I guess I kind of do the same thing. Like, to my friends, I'm Andy. To everybody else, I'm Andrew.
Right.
Or I don't know you. I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, I do that one a lot. I'm buddy. Hey, buddy.
So, are you an original, like, Reston kid?
Yeah. Born and raised. Well, not born, but raised, yeah. I mean, I was born in Alexandria, but I moved to Reston when I was, like, in fucking kindergarten.
Close enough.
Before kindergarten, yeah. I mean, I was, like, three or four years old when I moved there. The summer before kindergarten is when I met Tim. Me and Tim lived in the same neighborhood. So me and Tim have been friends since kindergarten.
I was going to ask, like, how long have you known all these guys?
So me and Tim have known each other since we were four, roughly. Me and Joe have known each other since I was in hostile environments. So that's probably, what, 35 years? And then I've known Guam for about 35 years. And then Ed is the youngin', and I've known him for like 26 or 27 years. We've known each other our whole lives.
Basically.
Yeah, totally.
When did you start playing music?
I had just gone sober, so I think it was around 14. So, like, I played in a really shitty band, and our name was Positive Hate. And that was with Craig Harmison and a couple other dudes. And Craig Harmison went on to start LDK. And then that didn't work out so well because it was stupid. I didn't really like it. And then I can't remember who the bass player. The bass player for Hostile Environment was like, yeah, I'm leaving or whatever. I don't want to play anymore. So I started playing. And I think we played half a dozen shows. And by shows, I mean like basement shows and Jam for Man and shit like that. And then that kind of piddled out and Remission started. And then I want to say I was probably 18 when I officially joined Avail. 18 or 19, something like that.
So you said Remission started. You played in Remission too?
No, I didn't play in Remission. I was hanging out. Me and Tim were hanging out pretty hard at that point. So we didn't, like, that was all, that was, it was basically, I mean, it was like Jason, that dude Jason that played guitar in Remission also played in Hostile Bradley.
Bradley.
Bradley?
Jason Bradley.
Yeah. He played in Hostile Environment also. And then Andre Love was just like the go-to drummer that played in every fucking band it seemed like.
Yeah.
It's super funny too because both what's his name? David and Pat were in Avail for a hot second. I mean, Pat was in for a little while, yeah, for sure. But that's Dave sang. I think he sang for one show or something.
So when did you think, like, I can be a musician? I could maybe be a full-time,
Never.
And make it as a musician?
Never. I never, that thought never crossed my mind. Ever.
Really?
Never. Just playing punk music, having a good time. Like, there was, like, no big punk bands were on fucking indie labels and shit, right? Like, all the punk bands that I heard when we were growing up were like Circle Jerks and stuff like that. And they were on fucking majors. Ramones was on a major. Sex Pistols were on a major. Fucking five kids from Reston that moved to Richmond were never going to be on a fucking major label. That was for sure, right? So we ended up putting out our first 7-inch. And I put out a 7-inch and I was like, I'm done, dude. I don't need to put anything else out. And then the first time we went to California, like, I was like, holy shit, I just got paid to fucking go to California. That's crazy. And ever since then, I mean, that was within the, I mean, I think I was 20 years old when I went to California on a 7-inch. So as soon as that happened, I was done. Everything else was icing on the cake.
what led to that? Like, how did you guys get the tour out there?
I mean, we had a bunch of fans that would stay at our house. Like, back in those days, there was, like, big phone lists that you'd get put on, right? And fans would pass the phone lists around. And we were one of the contacts for Richmond. And so bands would come through, and we would get their contacts, and then we would then call their places. And then that's how we ended up booking a tour out to California.
And how'd that tour go?
I mean, the first time we went to California, we didn't lose any money. I think we ended up making like $200 a piece too, so that was killer. You know, we were out there for, I don't know, 3 weeks or a month or something like that, and we still made money, so that was killer.
Do you remember the places you played?
Most of them, yeah. Like, I remember most. I mean, not on the first tour, but I mean, you know, because some of those places no longer exist. But we got to play some pretty cool spots, like Shea Cafe in San Diego, and, you know, cool spots. The Gilman Street, which is cool, and you know, we did all that stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, Gilman Street is pretty famous.
Yeah, for a solid year, I was, me personally, I was on you got like a membership card every year. You know, you had to pay dues to become a member. It was technically like a private club kind of thing, but, you know, stupid. But they had like membership cards, and for 1 year it was my picture. It was my stupid face on the membership card, so it was pretty fun. That was pretty cool.
Now, what about the decision that you guys made to move from Reston to Richmond? What was the thought process that went into
there
that?
There really wasn't one, really. I mean, Tim and Joe came down because Tim's older brother went to school at VCU. And Tim and Joe went down on, like, a Friday night, you know, like, left Reston at, like, midnight and pulled into Richmond at, like, 1:30 and were walking around, like, not the downtown area, but, like, the cool area where there was, like, you know, 10 bars on three blocks and they all had live music. And they said they kind of walked to one end and, like, there was some, like, weird Poison cover band playing somewhere, crazy punk band playing, like, Faith No More was playing at the end, Nuclear Assault was playing. And they said they were kind of walking through, and it was kind of lame because there was, you know, nothing going on, and there was nobody out, and they were like, this kind of sucks. And then, like, they were walked back to the house, and, like, the bars let out at, like, 1:45, and just, like, hundreds of fucking people and kids, like, piled in the streets, and there was fights with bouncers and people lighting trees on fire, and they basically were like, fuck this, we're moving here. And then, like, came back, and, like, Sunday, like, they came back, like, Sunday, and they're like, all right, well, you guys want to keep the band together, we're fucking moving to Richmond. So most of us moved, and then Brian Stewart was a singer at the time, and Brian was like, okay, I'll be down there in, like, a couple, 3 or 4 months, or whatever it was, and he's like, you know, don't smoke in the house. I'm like, whatever, man. You know, when you get here and you're here, we won't smoke in the house, but whatever. And so he found out that we were smoking in the house and he quit the band because of it.
No shit.
Yeah, he quit the band because we were smoking in the house.
I never heard that story.
He's a weird cat, man. Like,
he's just a weird dude. He's on some his own shit kind of shit sometimes, you know? That's a funny thing to base an important life decision around, I guess.
Well, I mean, at that time, it really wasn't that big of a life decision, right? I mean, we were just, you know, like I said, five guys from Reston that just moved to Richmond. You know, that we had, I think Avail as an entity had played like 2 shows out of town at that point, you know? So we weren't touring, we weren't doing anything. We just played like, I think we played a show in Philly and maybe a show in like Maryland. And that was it.
Yeah, but it's your band and guys that you've known for a long time.
Yeah, but, I mean, that was Brian's style. I guess it still is Brian's style, sort of. It's just to, like, be fucking, you know, weird and base his decisions on, you know, jerk neck maneuvers kind of shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know necessarily, but if that's, you know, if that's the deal, that's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, that's the reason he decided not to move down. Absolutely. That's why I quit the band.
And how did you guys rearrange at that point?
Well, David from Not Remission and Knothead was down, so we kind of started singing with him and Pat in the house, and then I think we played one show with that lineup with Tim, Joe, Pat, and Dave, and then Dave and Pat like freaked out and decided they were going to be hippies and like travel the U.S. in a fucking VW van or some shit like that. They quit the band and left. And so me and Joe and Tim were kind of like, well, what the fuck are we going to do? And at that point, we had Chuck McCauley living in the house, who played guitar and like guitar lab with Joe and Tim in high school. And we're like, do you want to play bass? He's like, yeah, I mean, I guess for a while. And a buddy of ours from Arlington moved into the house. He played drums. Tim was like, fuck it, I'll sing. Eric Larson will play drums. We'll just go from there. And that lineup held up for years.
I mean, that's interesting because, you know, listening back to any of the recordings from before that and any of the bands, Tim was a hell of a drummer.
Oh, he was ridiculous, dude. Listen to the first LDK demo. He was insane.
I have. That's part of what I'm basing that on.
Oh, he was a straight metalhead. Him and his brother were like puffy white high top shoes and fucking leather jackets with jean vests over them, super fucking long hair. You know, like they were wearing battle vests before battle vests were cool. So he was playing crossover pretty much.
Yeah, but so it was he was hell on a kit.
Yeah, he was real good. He's still real good. He doesn't play very often, but he's still real good.
Well, I think in some ways it's a damn shame that he doesn't play drums for a band.
I mean, I guess.
I don't know. Just as an appreciator of music and rest in hardcore.
Sure.
You know, I thought he was a great drummer. I'm not saying anything about his singing or guitar playing. I'm not criticizing it. It's
sure.
Just one of those things. You know,
yeah,
it's like why can't you do both? Why can't you, you know, do that in one thing and then play drums in another thing?
I'm not here to tell him
what to do.
Sure. Him and his brother are really good musicians, right, man? They would kind of get to the point where they were really good at something, and then they just were like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do something else. And they've both done that their whole lives. So, like, his brother's a really good musician, and now he writes, like, operas and shit.
What more?
His older brother was, when we go visit him and we were playing in Florida, we'd go to his house and we would just randomly put our fingers on a fretboard and on a guitar and be like, what is this? And he's like, well, that's an A minor with an F major with a something, you know, like he could tell us what it was. I mean, we'd just be randomly placing our fingers on a guitar and he could tell us what the notes were. It was crazy.
That's pretty cool. What's his name?
Jimmy. Jimmy played guitar forever.
Him and Jim?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But he played guitar forever, and then, like, after he got really, really good at guitar, he stopped because he didn't really, he was like, what am I going to do with this? And he started playing the piano. And then the piano turned into, like, writing musical scores and shit, and he started writing, like, fucking operas and shit like that. I don't know, symphonies or whatever. So.
Did he ever play in a band?
He played in some metal bands, like, when he moved to Richmond, but, like, he never played any bands in Raston, no.
What were your favorite, like, other local bands and also, like, bands to go see back then.
Like Richmond, Reston bands to go see them. I mean, everybody liked Reston.
Reston era, and then Richmond when you first moved there too.
Well, I mean, obviously LDK was one of my favorites. And Andy wrote a bunch of songs about me anyway. So I mean, I kind of have to like that, right?
What are the songs that are about you?
Brothers to the End. And then there's another one where he had started drinking again and I was still sober, and he wrote a song about that too. I can't remember what the name of that song is. Yeah, but BTTE is about me.
I had no idea.
Yeah. All the BTTE and Brothers to the End stuff, that's me and Andy, who's obviously dead, Craig Harmison, Brian Sullivan. Yeah, that was the only people that, like, got the scars and all that shit. Me and Andy were the only ones with the tattoos. But, let's see. I liked Transilience a lot. Just because it was so fucking weird. It didn't make any sense. But, like, most of the other bands, I mean, I liked Remission because they were my buddies. But, I mean, like, if I was like, yeah, let's go see Remission, I probably wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done it to Doubt or any of those other bands, Knothead. But I liked them. They're my buddies, right? And then,
sure.
And then when we moved to here, I mean, there were so many fucking good bands. Like, when we moved here, there were bands like Guar and Four Walls Falling and just crazy bands. And then Hose Got Cable started here. They're nuts. Hose Got Cable was a band called Hagal, and Hagal played a jam for Man 2.
And they also moved there?
Yeah, a couple years after we moved here. Like, a couple of moved here for school, and then, like, they started another band. It's basically the same dudes, but they called it Hose Got Cable instead of a doll.
Did they put out albums?
No, I think Hose has a CD out, but it was, like, I think they put out, like, a 7-inch and, like, a demo. And then they put out, like, a CD of everything, like, a bunch of years later. But Hagal had just kind of demoed it.
Did you have, like, a collection of all those 7-inches
and
stuff?
I still have all the demos, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Like, it's kind of neat to look back and, like, look and see how silly we were trying to be. Like, we were trying to be, like, we know what we're doing, and we had no fucking clue what we were doing. It was kind of neat. Like, I think part of us kind of thought, like, some of us thought that, like, this is what we would do, and we would be musicians, and yada, yada. I think the ones that thought that they were going to be musicians are, like, working construction or working, you know, a cubicle now.
Well, I mean, you guys got pretty popular in Richmond. You were certainly one of the biggest bands, at least from the Reston scene, probably the biggest band.
Yeah, I mean, we toured all over the world, and, you know, we were on Lookout Records when our label mates were Green Day, and hanging out with the guys from Operation Ivy and Rancid before they were big, and, you know, then we went to Fat Records and did a bunch of cool shit with them and Lag Wagon and stuff like that. Then we went to James Street for a while, but now we're on Epitaph. So that's kind of, you know, I still get royalties.
In terms of the stuff that you recorded, like, what's your favorite album, or what are your favorite songs?
I mean, I guess my favorite record, I mean, they're all, I like them all. I mean, there's definitely songs on them. I'm like, God, that was a piece of shit. But, like, I think my favorite record is probably Dixie. Because we had just kind of sort of found us, and we kind of gotten away from, like, the... Because it was, like, a weird Reston sound, right? Like, all the wrestling bands were kind of odd. You know what I mean? Like, we all had, like, an odd sound. None of us had, like, a straight rock and roll sound or anything like that. You know, we had, like, a weird wrestling hardcore mixed with metal, mixed with that the early emo, no dancing DC bullshit, you know? So I think Satiate had a lot to do with that. But then Dixie was like, we kind of found our own selves. So I don't really have any favorite songs. I'm like, come on.
So you think Richmond and moving there helped shape that sound of Dixie?
Oh, without Richmond, we would have broken up in 6 months and we never would have played another show. 100%.
So what do you think of the fact that, like, I don't know, Brian put the stuff that you guys recorded early on, like, up on Bandcamp, and, you know, there's that, I mean, that stuff is out there.
I mean, it's just for him stroking his ego. That's what he does. Not even stroking his ego, but I don't know. It's whatever. I mean, people enjoy it, so that's cool and whatever, but.
But I just mean of, like, the, I guess he calls it Each Other.
Yeah, there's a demo.
Each Other album.
No, it's a demo tape.
Okay.
A first two demo tapes. Yeah. That he put out later. Without asking anybody, mind you.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I'm asking about, and sort of, you know, you seem to be saying that it has a certain rest and sound to it. I was just wondering, like, I don't know, how you feel about that is the veil versus, like, what you guys became.
Oh, dude, it's night and day. Like, completely night and day. You know, that version of the veil, like I said, wouldn't have lasted another 6 months. You know, in my opinion.
And you're not a fan of those tracks?
I mean, whatever. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really in the band at that point. I was more of like a roadie kind of guy, hang around kind of guy. So I didn't have a lot to do with that whole era of music anyway.
Right.
As opposed to like writing it and help write it and all that other stuff. I didn't have a lot to do with that. So, you know. And as far as Brian putting it out, whatever.
What was your role in terms of the songwriting process? And, like, how did you guys write stuff?
Just as much as, like, anybody else. Like, sometimes some people would bring riffs in, or, you know, and we kind of work from there. Or someone would have a drum beat that they want to incorporate, or a bass line, or something like that. Or we'd just be sitting around jamming, and, you know, one of us would be like, oh, that sounds good. Play that again, you know, like, stuff like, you know, that's just how we kind of worked. It was very rare that people would bring in whole songs.
Did you go to a lot of shows in D.C.?
Yeah, tons of shows. Tons and tons of shows. So many that it's almost hard to remember a lot of them. I mean, but I saw cool-ass bands, and then I was lucky enough to travel and see even more crazy bands. Like, I saw the Exploited, and Dr. No, and Youth of Today, and Gorilla Biscuits and Verbal Assault and Fugazi and just crazy, crazy, crazy bands.
What were your favorite venues?
I mean, I loved the WUSC Music Hall, and I mean, WUSC was probably my favorite. That's where I saw the most shows, I think. So I think that was my favorite one. You know, like, obviously going to 930, but 930 were, like, the bigger bands that, you know, like, Agnostic Front will play 930, and then, like, Token Engine and all these other crazy bands would play the WUSC. But then there was a Safari Club, and Safari Club had killer matinees. And, like, I saw tons of crazy bands there. Judge, all these insane bands.
Like, how did you learn about all these bands?
I mean, people would have, like a tape of a tape of a tape of a tape, you know, that, like, you would get, and then somebody would, like, move there from fucking California or Chicago or something and bring back records, and you would tape those records. And then, like, I had a pretty limited, not limited, I mean, we knew a lot of shit, but then, like, when we started going on tour, I was just like, holy fuck, where are all these bands from? And I found insane bands when I was on tour. So, I mean, it was pretty much like the one that fucked up Reston, like all of Reston. I don't think there's one person that lives in Reston that around that time frame that didn't love RKL. So that was the band that fucked everything up. And everybody was like, holy shit, that was the band. And we got that from, like, a kid that was from Reston and then moved to California for like a year and brought back a tape of the first RKL record, and we were just like, what the fuck is this? It was insane. They're still one of my favorite bands.
Well, so how if all the rest of bands had all these great influences, did it not, you know, sound good to you?
I mean, it didn't not sound good. I mean, it was just like, it was a thing. It was a bunch of kids, right? Like, you know, considering someone like the older kids in that time were like 16 years, 17 years old, you know what I mean? Like, how amazing can the music really be until you actually get out of your small hometown? You know, I think that was kind of like what we wanted to do, but I mean, it was more just, you know, the rest of the scene was very incestuous, very like clicky. So it was good to get out.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I also think like you can't kind of appreciate Reston until you get out of it.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't really appreciate Reston. Like, I thought it was cool that we did music and that it was the 70s for us at least, and you could still, in the early 80s, and you could still go outside and play outside all day and not have to worry about anything. Outside of that, fucking Reston sucked. you know?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that it was like, you know, the woods and the lake,
sure.
And the paths and the biking and skating and, you know, being close enough to D.C. to go see a lot of shows.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay for that, yeah. But, I mean, like, I was a punk rocker, man. Like, we didn't go, you know, we didn't go in the lake and stuff like that. We didn't, you know, run around the woods. We were, you know, people were trying to get drunk and trying to, you know, smoke weed and shit running around and trying to skateboard and have sex with girls. That's what we did. We weren't doing anything cool.
Well, I mean, we thought all those things were cool.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, but I mean,
it's cooler than not doing those things.
Sure, but you can do those things anyway. We were just lucky enough that, I mean, like, when you think about it realistically, I think one of the main reasons that Reston had so many bands and so many kids that were willing to be in bands and sacrifice to be in bands, it was because, you know, Reston was a pretty rich summer. I mean, how many 14-year-olds did you know that had, like, a full Marshall stack? You know what I mean? You know, like, maybe now it's prevalent, but not there. You know? There's a bunch of kids that, you know, middle-class kids that happen to just like punk rock.
And there was nothing else to do.
Yeah, for the most part. Pretty much.
Like you said.
Yeah, there was no cable TV, you know, there was no internet, you know?
In terms of punk rock, did you feel like you were rebelling against something?
Oh, everything. Rebelling, especially against Reston itself. You know? I don't want to be
in one way.
I don't want to be those kids. Like, you know, the kids that you'd see in our high schools and before our high schools. I was like, I don't want to fucking be those people. Like, I don't care about, you know, getting good grades or being on the fucking hockey team or being on the football team or, you know, hanging out with the cool kids and all that bullshit. I hated those people. You know, I didn't want anything to do with those people. I didn't want to look like those people. I didn't want to think like those people, act like those people. I hated them. You know, and that's all the rest of them was back then.
What about their parents?
Oh, I fucking hated everybody's parents. We all did. We hated our own parents. We hated everybody. I mean, before the, like, the Jam for Man part of it, like, there was maybe, like, 20 punk rockers and, like, 15 metalheads. I mean, there was really nobody around. And then, you know, there was a big fight one day against jocks or some kids from another neighborhood, and the punk rockers and the metalheads joined together. You know what I mean? And then, so there was like 40 kids that just happened to look different and act different and think different. And then luckily it spawned into other things later. But I mean, it was, you know, 40 really stupid outcast kids that hated everything. You know, and just happen to be able to play music and do it. So.
And you're not impressed with what all those, like, 40 kids accomplished?
I mean, impressed, yeah, I guess. But, I mean, I find it kind of odd. And that's kind of like with the Brian Stewart thing. Like, they're still holding on to it. I was like, well, that was, you know, 35 years ago, and I get it. And I understand it, but I mean, it's not, it was a small blip in my life, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not shitting on it, but at the same time, it's like, you know, some people that never left Reston never left that mentality, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, you did a lot after that, and you did a lot with music.
Sure. But I mean,
but,
like that's what I'm saying. Like,
but would,
like,
that, but would that have happened without the Reston part of it?
I don't know. Probably not, no, because that's where we started, right?
Yeah.
And it probably,
and
yeah.
Without the other kids that were there, and without Jam for Man, and without, you know.
I mean, even, like, I mean, I know it's good for everybody, but, I mean, like, even towards the end of the Jam for Man stuff, I hated that. I hated Jam for Man. So, like, there's these punk rockers and metalheads trying to, like, do, like, a cover of Hey Jude by the fucking Beatles because they thought it was cool. And I was like, this is fucking lame. What are you guys doing? You know? But, I mean, that was me. And I was a little bit more outspoken than the rest of them. So, I mean, you know, I always rub people the wrong way anyway. So.
Well, that's what, you know, turns you into a a punk rocker.
Yeah, probably.
If you get along great with everybody and everything, you know, then what do you have to be angry about or feel
right? Right. What I have to be full of angst with. I still got lots of angst and still dislike a lot of shit, but I mean, it's not as bad as it was.
Well, so you don't play music at all anymore, or you are still playing?
No. I don't do anything. I work. I have kids.
At what point did you stop?
I mean, the last show that we played, but I mean, as far as I was concerned, after putting out that 7-inch in Mona, California, I was happy. We could have stopped then, and I would have been completely content.
Even with all the great music you made after that?
Sure. I mean, if it had stopped then, I would have been like, cool, I'm done. I did what I wanted to do. I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. But do I think it was awesome, all the shit that happened afterwards? Yeah, hell yeah. It was amazing.
There we go.
Yeah, but would I, you know, gauge my whole life off of that? No, not at all. Like, we didn't try to be anybody or do anything that we weren't. You know what I mean? We knew who we were.
I mean, don't you get whatever pleasure out of, like, playing music just in general, just for yourself, like sitting there in your bedroom, like pick up a guitar and play?
No.
I mean, I'm not talking about getting up on stage, you know, in front of thousands of people necessarily.
No, I don't miss it. I don't care about it at all.
That's interesting. I find that kind of fascinating. Especially if, you know, for somebody that was really good at it.
Yeah, well, you know, shit happens. Shit changes, man. That's just the way it works.
How do you, in terms of, like, that creative side of yourself, do you, like, express that through anything?
No, I mean, no, not really. It's just here, just doing shit. You know. No. there was a time that I did that, and I just don't do that anymore.
I find that interesting as a person that, like, I, like, constantly have to be working on some projects or doing something or making something. But yet, at the same time, I also sometimes feel like that's really exhausting and draining.
Totally. It is.
I wonder what would just happen if I quit everything one day.
I never needed that, right? You know what I mean? Like, I never needed to do that. We never needed to do that. Like, we just, once we were doing it. And then once we weren't. I know it sounds weird, but I mean, that is what it is, right?
Yeah. It makes me wonder why you did it in the first place.
Because it was fun. It was fun.
But it's not fun anymore?
No, because we don't do it anymore. I mean, there was a time in our lives where it was our job. Like, that's, maybe people have 9-to-5s where they go to work in an office or to go with construction. My office and my construction was going on tour. So it's not as... No, stay with me, please. So, I mean, it wasn't... It kind of took a little bit of the fun out of it, you know?
I guess what I'm asking is what gives you, like, that hit of adrenaline, or what is that fun as that stuff was for you now?
Finding new music, listening to music. And I used to get in a lot of fights back in the day, so that helped.
No, but I mean nowadays.
No, listen to music. I still try to find new bands, and I'm still stoked on new punk bands. So.
And still going to shows as much as you were?
Not anywhere near as much as I was, because I had kids. But like now, I'm starting to take my kids to shows, and that's fucking cool, right?
Yeah. I can't wait till I can do that with my daughter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm taking my son to go see the last couple United Blood things. So he's seen, like, Agnostic Front and, you know,
and Judge and all these crazy local bands. He's used to it. My daughter's just starting to go, so.
That's great.
Yeah, that's
That's great that you can share that with them and that they're into that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably grow out of it and hate it, right? They'll probably want to be, you know, doctors and lawyers and all the stuff that I hated. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the shit that my parents took me to was, like, the Monkees and Genesis.
Right.
When I was a kid, so, you know. And, then the first show I ever went to in D.C. was, like, Anthrax and Primus and Public Enemy.
That's nice. That's a good show right there.
Yeah, it was.
You always remember your first show. My first show was COC with Mike Dean. Mike Dean was still playing in the band when they were fucking gnarly. It's a bunch of weird fucking dudes from North Carolina.
That sounds like it would be a fucking awesome show, too.
It was fucking pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Well, man, thanks for talking to me. You got, like, a really interesting perspective on stuff that's definitely different from all the other dudes that I've talked to.
I'm sure.
Well, I mean, just, you know... I know that this is somewhat an exercise in nostalgia that I'm doing.
Sure.
And you seem like you're very not nostalgic, you know?
I'm not nostalgic, but I still don't like living in the past. You know what I mean? That's not the person that I am. That's not the person that I ever was. So.
No, and that's good. Like, nobody should live in the past. At all. And
sure.
if I thought that this was contributing to me living in the past, then I guess, you know.
No, I don't think that at all.
I would have to burn all of this.
Right. Well, yeah, I think, you know, like I said, I'm not that dude. Not me. I don't pretend it to be me. I don't play well with others when that's what they do. So, you know, in the end of it, I was a wrestling kid that got out of wrestling.